Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Hi, welcome to Monday. Hoo-wah. Did you catch any video from the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Oh, I wish I could just be 100% Obama supporter. Too bad he just violates so many laws internationally. Damn. Funny guy. Really knows how to take these right-wingers and just dip them in their own boiling fat. You know what I'm saying? I love it. I love that part of it. I love it. This hour is being sponsored by Dave. I guess I should just say Dave. Mike, I want to thank you. I want to thank my wife, Bonnie, for turning me on to you. Keep up the fight. Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much. Thanks, Bonnie. Absolutamente. Thank you, Brad Friedman. Did I say that already? Did I? I don't remember. Thank you, Brad. Brad filled in for us Friday. And thank God. Thanks, Brad. A lot of little items here. Last night at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Rick Santorum was there, of course. You know, the one finger in his nose and the other one in his butt. And he apparently asked Lindsay Lohan to pose for a photo for him. And then he denied it. Lindsay Lohan was sitting with Greta Van Susteren, and Santorum approached, according to TMZ. He reportedly asked Lindsay Lohan to take a picture of him with Van Susteren. And she did. And then he snapped a photo of Lohan alone. So a reporter asked Santorum if he took a picture of Lohan, and this is all in the video. And a visibly uncomfortable Santorum says, I took a picture of a lot of people today. So he can't remember what happened. And if you look around, if you go to TMZ, you'll see a photo of Santorum leaning over Lohan's table. Look where his eyes are. what a hypocritical little crap ass he is, isn't he? Isn't Rick Santorum just, I mean, ooh, don't you want to just go pants him? I do. I just want to get him someplace and pull his bloomers down, then give him a wedgie and turn him loose in a mall someplace. Ah! Oklahoma Supreme Court says no! Good for you. They voted unanimously to veto a ballot measure that would have given embryos full personhood rights, ruling it, quote, clearly unconstitutional, end quote, because it would block a woman's legal right to have an abortion. Now, this is Oklahoma. This is Oklahoma, folks. The personhood measure would give embryos the same legal rights as people from the moment of fertilization, which opponents say would ban abortion and complicate the legality of in vitro fertilization and many forms of birth control. And enacting such a law would violate the U.S. Supreme Court's 1992 decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which allows states to pass some abortion restrictions, but prevents them from overturning the constitutional right to end a pregnancy. Well, actually, a constitutional right to privacy, but who's going to quibble? So the Oklahoma Supreme Court wrote in its unanimous decision, quote, the mandate of Casey, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, is as binding on this court today as it was 20 years ago, end quote. Yay! And then they added, initiative petition number 395 conflicts with Casey and is void on its face and is hereby ordered stricken. This Oklahoma. A personhood bill about fried eggs. No, unfried eggs. Embryos, I'm sorry. A personhood bill also failed in the Oklahoma legislature earlier this month when Republican leadership in the State House of Representatives decided not to bring it to a vote because, well, you know. Nancy Northup, president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, said, quote, this amendment would have run roughshod over the fundamental constitutionally protected reproductive rights of all Oklahoma women. In affirming our request to strike it down, the Oklahoma Supreme Court has struck a powerful blow against the repugnant tactics of those who seek to vote down the rights of others and to enshrine their hostility to women's lives, health, and rights in the laws of the land, end quote. Yeah, unanimous decision. Oklahoma. You hear me, True Seeker? Oklahoma. So, way to go, Oklahoma Supreme Court. Take that, you right-wing chicken pluckers. Did you hear about this? You know, Obama's out there wowing him at the correspondence dinner with wit. I mean, you know, all right, so he has writers. But, you know, you can have the best writers in the world. If you can't deliver, if your timing is off, you come across like a dork. One thing Obama, to me, has never come across as is a dork. Maybe he is a mangler of the Constitution, a violator of international law, and somebody has no problem ordering the assassination of innocent people. But he's not a dork in the sense I mean. So while he is being witty and charming and all that kind of stuff, a number of flyers posted on parking meters in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, when the time comes to give the world an enema, they're going to stick the tube in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Trust me on that. But these flyers have created a stir for their imagery. They attempt to connect Barack Obama to the Nazi Holocaust. Yeah. Nazi Holocaust. Yeah. Okay. Barack Obama. Right. The pamphlet said, quote, Hitler's Nazi Germany has been revived in the U.S. and the target is Americans, end quote. Well, that's true, but not by Obama. You people can't keep your mind straight. He's a socialist. He's a communist. He's a Muslim. Where's he from? Kenya? Is it Kenya? Or is it Indonesia? Oh, I know where he's from. He's from Hawaii. The flyer pairs an image of a swastika alongside a movie cover for the film The Obama Deception, a documentary by renowned right-wing conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. The flyers say Obama's health care bill is not a health care bill. Instead, it's a total government takeover of every area of life. Like gun confiscation, euthanasia, euthanizing the poor, the elderly, the ill, those who've maxed out their health insurance. That's what it is? It's a euthanasia bill. Okay. All right. As Huffington Post reports, quote, using direct comparisons of Obama to Nazis or other notorious political villains has been somewhat common since the president's election, apart from the famous or infamous Tea Party-type protest signs that depicted Obama as Adolf Hitler during the heat of the debate over health care reform. A Catholic bishop in Illinois more recently drew criticism when he claimed the president was, quote, intent on following a similar path, end quote, as Hitler and Stalin due to his, quote, radical pro-abortion extreme secularist agenda. Don't you get tired of this? Do you ever get so tired of this you just want to rip somebody's throat out? Or their eyes? Or some part of their anatomy? Ever feel that way? Huh? You sons of bitches, good damn. Okay. We're going to take a break. And we're going to come back and beguile you with more insanity on the Malloy program. Stay with us.
My home is in Manan, where I was weaned. I've learned all my life, cruel England's to blame. And so I'm a part of the Patriot game. Come all you young rebels and list while we sing. For the love of one's country is a terrible thing. It banishes fear with the speed of a flame. And it makes us all part.
Before it hits the street, they say that no one grabs it faster. Their coverage can't be beat.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. You know, on Mondays, I usually get a lot of really heartfelt emails that come from people over the weekend. They have a chance to write. And especially if they expose themselves to this crap that passes for the Sunday so-called talk shows. Although it was kind of fun, I saw a six-minute clip of Rachel Maddow just cutting Alex Castellanos' new body orifice. Way to go, Rachel. What a thug, Castellanos says. That smarmy, sickening, disgusting little look that these right-wingers put on their faces when they know that they're caught. And Rachel had him by the scrotum. It was just very, very much fun to watch. Total ass, Castellanos. Anyway, from a lawyer, a loyal listener, Mike, I've written to you on several occasions under another email address. I'm using an anonymous one, given the nature of this email. I was listening to the Thursday show on podcast and listening to the part about General Electric not paying income taxes. I've read about that in the news, and these things are a constant reminder of my current situation. I've been in a contract with a small business for a couple of years. These SOBs pay me way less than they should, a feature of the economy where I have little bargaining power to renegotiate a higher rate, which I've tried to do, but to no avail. I'm supporting my significant other as he goes to school, and I have been struggling to pay my bills. As a result, I am now in arrears on my taxes. I hear these stories about GE, a company with billions in profits paying nothing, and in fact, receiving money back from the government, and I'm struggling to pay the few thousand I owe each year. Mike, I feel awful that I've not been able to pay my taxes. I hate the situation. However, it is absolutely infuriating when I hear GE and so many others who come out ahead, way ahead, every year, and the government vomits money on them for shipping jobs overseas. Again, I hate this situation. I feel horribly guilty. I can't be the only one in this boat. As you've said many times, what the hell will it take? Well, at what time do the pitchforks and torches come out and we run these bastards into the sea for what they're doing to regular people just struggling to help loved ones? I get so sick of the so-called personal responsibility lecture from people who steal like this. Sometimes I just lose hope and want to check out. My partner is the only thing that keeps me around. Were it not for him, I really wouldn't be here. A loyal listener. Well, that's pretty bleak, loyal. Seriously. Let me just twist that around a little bit. You know, why admit that kind of defeat to these sons of bitches, these right-wingers? I've had tax problems before, many times, where I had to have payment plans and so on and so forth. Not anymore, but you could, loyal listener, you could probably work something out. My advice, you didn't ask for it, but and there's nothing more useless than ask for advice. I understand that. But if you have a friend who is an accountant, or if not, just an accountant, a tax accountant, or maybe even an anonymous phone call to IRS, just can you still make anonymous phone calls? I don't even know anymore. But don't despair. I mean, that's not a big issue, owing back taxes. it's something that, yeah, you have to take care of one way or another. You know, if your tax bill were $1 million, you could probably negotiate it way down to about the level you are now. But the fact that you owe a couple thousand, that's the kind of person the IRS likes to grind on. Like I say, I know, I've been there. And with me, when I used to have a different business years ago, once you get in the pinchers of IRS, it's very difficult to get out. And I know that feeling about, you know, can't take too much more of this, but don't let that happen to you, seriously. You know, die for love, maybe, but don't die from frustration. You know, very romantic, kind of 18th century or 19th century romantic poet, kind of, you know, Shelley or Keats or someone like that, you know, dying for love. Okay. That, yeah, okay. But not because of the IRS or GE. Screw them. You know what I'm saying? So, loyal listener, don't check out. Stick around. Because you know what, pal or palette? You didn't state your gender. You eventually will have the last laugh. Trust me on that, okay? All right. Oh, my goodness. We're almost on top of another break. We have miles to go before we sleep, so do stick around. The Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled unanimously to get the hell out of town, Oklahoma legislature, with this fertilized egg personhood thing. Well, a federal court in Texas ruled today also. I got to share that one with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, in addition to Oklahoma Supreme Court striking down this half-assed personhood nonsense, federal court in Texas ruled today to stop a new law that excluded Planned Parenthood from the Texas Women's Health Program. Remember we talked about that last week? Week before. That program serves about 130,000 low-income women in Texas. And a U.S. district judge there ruled that the law was unconstitutional, the one passed by these Texas yahoos, because it bars 8 Planned Parenthood clinics that don't provide abortions from participating in the program based on their affiliation with legally and financially separate entities that do offer abortions. Why, of course. The judge also cited the fact that the Department of Health and Human Services cut off all Medicaid funding for family planning to Texas because of the new law, which could jeopardize the entire program. The judge wrote in his ruling, quote, "The court is particularly influenced by the potential for immediate loss of access to necessary medical services by several thousand Texas women. The record before the court at this juncture reflects uncertainty as to the continued viability of the Texas Women's Health Program," end quote. Now, you remember that after Health and Human Services cut off the Texas Medicaid money as an act of retaliation, This half-assed governor down there, Perry, promised to make up for the $30 billion funding gap and pay for the women's health program with the state's own money. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. But conservative Texas officials said that they would rather end the entire program than allow Planned Parenthood to participate in it. Boy, they just hate Planned Parenthood, don't they? You say the words Planned Parenthood is like saying the words acorn. Hold on a minute. Satan! How's Andrew doing? Really? Well, I'll be damned. Getting into it, huh? Did he earn his horns yet? On the first day? Woo! All right, talk to you later. Damn. That was quick. On his first day, he got his horns? Anyway, Acorn, Planned Parenthood. The right-wingers just see red. The whites of their eyes go crimson. They start to cry blood drops. Their nostrils flare and smoke comes out. You ever notice that? Planned Parenthood pleaded. I could think of something better to do, but pleaded with Rick Perry today to keep the program in place, despite the court's ruling. Because it offers cancer screenings, birth control testing, and treatment for STDs and other health exams to low-income women across the state. Whew. Patricio Gonzalez, CEO of Planned Parenthood Association of Hidalgo County, said, quote, "We call Governor Perry and the state to put Texan women first and set aside any vendetta they may have against Planned Parenthood. No woman should ever have to fear being cut off from her doctor's care because of short-sighted political games," end quote. Rick's office did not immediately respond to calls for comment. We all have to think about it, you know. You damn women. You got them little secret places. That just irritates the hell out of me. You know what I'm saying? I'm from Texas. Ooh. Well, did you hear about Romney? Now that Romney is the, how are media presenting it? Presumptive Republican nominee for president. Presumptive. That's because he doesn't have all of his chips in yet. But they're coming. Anyway, as his political prospects, according to HuffPo, as Romney's political prospects rose from good to golden last month following Santorum's exit from the presidential race, another status indicator jumped as well. The cost to campaign donors for a grip and grin photo opportunity with a cat and a candidate. You know, grip and grin. Hi, Governor. Hi there. Quick, hurry up. Photos with presidential candidates are a staple of what is known in Washington as a bragging wall. That's, you know, typically a wall in some jerk's office, which is covered with framed photos of themselves posing with famous and influential people. You ever seen one of those? All right, I've got one of Billy Joel and me up on the wall, but that's only because I used to date his, what would you call Bonnie? His almost sis. Sort of. They weren't blood relatives, but Bonnie's dad broke Billy Joel into the business. Well, more than childhood friend. Billy Joel lived in her basement, her family's basement in East Massapequa, New York. But I digress. So, you know, I'm guilty. Okay, I've got a photo up on the wall of Billy Joel and me, but that's about it. No presidential candidates ever. A bragging wall, huh? Anyway, back in February, when Santorum and the Newtster were both running strongly, a photo op at a policy roundtable with Romney in Washington, policy roundtable, right, would cost donors $2,500. But guess what? Ba-doom, ba-doom, boom, boom. Now it's no longer $2,500. Nope, it's not $5,000. Nope, it's not $7,500. Nope, it's $10,000 or more, which is four times what it would have cost in February, and the same amount that Barack Obama charges for a photo. So the Mister all of a sudden sees himself as equal to, at least in the photo op department, El Presidente, $10,000 for a photo. Now, the same $2,500 contribution that used to get donors a photo with Romney, and now it only gets him a ticket to the general reception. Contributions can be paid to one of three Romney presidential campaign accounts: Romney's Republican primary campaign, his Romney Victory, Inc. joint account with the Republican National Committee, or his general election fund, which is the newest addition to his fundraising pantheon. Woohoo! Oh, my God. $10,000. Man. From Justine in Maryland. Hi, Mike. I was thinking today about how the most notable campaign promises, quote-quote, that President Obama has kept, in my opinion, seem to involve war, ramping down in Iraq, ramping up in Afghanistan, increased drone strikes that kill so-called enemies and innocents alike, and according to reports we've been given, killing Osama bin Laden. On the other hand, Gitmo is still open. Any shred of civil liberties remaining after the Bush crime family left office is on life support at best, but in reality is dead on arrival. Obamacare doesn't even include a public option. Unemployment benefits have been traded away, and for what? There have been no prosecutions for war crimes or torture ordered and committed by the Bush-Cheney Rumsfeld and others in the Bush administration. No financial institutions or CEOs have been prosecuted for known fraud and other crimes. The Bush tax cuts for the 1% are still intact instead of expiring as the Republican passed law specified. Social Security insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid are, quote, on the table, end quote, to be weakened and changed, perhaps beyond recognition, and on and on and on. We know the list. For kicks and giggles, why not ask when the president is going to put on those comfy shoes and join the millions of workers across the country who continue to fight for better wages and working conditions, including union and bargaining rights? Ha! Okay, to his credit, Mr. Obama did sign into law the Lilly Ledbetter legislation to allow women to sue against wage discrimination, and he has pushed back against Republican attacks on women's fundamental reproductive and other health care rights. Given where we were 4 years ago, it's amazing how truly transformational Obama could have been. And tragic to think about that opportunity, which has been lost for generations. Best, Justine in Maryland. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, Justine, but damn, he sure can speechify. And he sure can deliver jokes. And he sure can hold these right-wingers by their heels and dip them into their own boiling fat. You know what I'm saying? But you're right, Justine. Can you say betrayal? This hour is being sponsored by Dave, who writes, Mike, I want to thank my wife, Bonnie, for turning me on to you. Keep up the fight. Thanks, Dave. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Dave and Bonnie. All right, we have a Prairie 2 report. We also have rather lengthy email here I got from Dee in Plano, Texas, who writes the program a lot, and I want to share with you. Because Dee is really pissed off in this one. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. So won't you let me help you, mister? Just pull your hat down the way I do and buy your pants just a little longer. And next time somebody laughs at you, you just tell them you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas.
10 before the hour. And this hour has been sponsored by Dave. His message, Mike, I want to thank my wife, Bonnie, for turning me on to you. Keep up the fight. Thanks, Dave. Thank you, Dave. Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate it very much. So D writes the following. Obama can't use bin Laden, but Bush could use Saddam and 9/11? Really? Are you kidding me? Seriously, are you kidding me? Actual legitimate media pundits and political professionals are really asking if President Obama should tout the killing of Osama bin Laden during his reelection campaign. Really? Seriously? I honestly don't know where to start. These are some of the same people who sat around jack-legged while George W. Bush flew a fighter jet onto an aircraft carrier with a jumbo red, white, and blue banner noting mission accomplished 9 years ago after single-handedly dismantling the Middle East with a go-it-alone war in Iraq. These are some of the same people who sat around tongue-tied while Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and their band of merry men walked our country straight into a bloody war where thousands of our troops were killed and trillions of dollars lost looking for weapons that didn't exist. These are some of the same people who happily reported on each and every instance of Bush and Cheney, citing September 11th in campaign and ad after campaign ad, and I don't remember hearing a ringing media chorus of, is this appropriate? What's even more disheartening is that Bush's people are still claiming that Bush kept the country safe, and very few ever correct them on the little fact that 9/11 did happen on their watch. Ergo, they did not keep the country safe. These are some of the same people who practically cheered during the 523 times that Bush and Cheney touted their capture and the killing of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, even though he had absolutely nothing to do at all with September 11th. And now some of these same people are actually questioning Obama's decision to highlight in his reelection ads the killing of the mastermind of 9/11, who killed over 3,000 individuals on U.S. soil. Really? That was a promise that Barack Obama made during a national presidential debate with John McCain in 2008, that he would have the military track down bin Laden and kill him, even if he was found to be hiding in U.S.-friendly Pakistan. At the time, John McCain and every Republican to the right of Nevada and even some Democrats roasted Obama for even thinking such a thing, but he did. He did it, and it worked. And now people are saying that he shouldn't tout that as one of his successes. Give me a break! Man, when the sun don't shine on a dog's tail, you can still see it wagging, can't you? Fact. Mitt Romney did say that it was not worth billions of dollars, and quote, moving heaven and earth, end quote, just to go after one person. He said that. And now there are people saying that President Obama shouldn't use that against Romney in his campaign. Seriously? Mitt Romney can stand in front of a factory that was closed in 2008 and publicly blame President Obama, but President Obama cannot blame Mitt Romney for words that actually came out of his own mouth? Come on, my media friends, you can do better than this. Republicans have used national security like a 2x4 to the heads of Democrats for decades, and for the first time, a Democratic president tries to use it, and everyone's asking, is this appropriate? Hell yes, it's appropriate! The Romney campaign should stop whining. All we've heard out of them is, what's wrong with everyone else? Not once have we heard what's right with Mitt Romney. Everyone wants to ask President Obama why he should be elected to a second term, but I've rarely heard anyone yet ask Romney why he should be elected to a first. I dare him to answer that question without his usual stance of just talking about what's wrong with the other guy. And since we are just about 6 months away from Election Day, I think it's high time the media started asking him that very question and demanding a legitimate answer. When Republicans go for the jugular in politics, the media calls it playing hardball. When Democrats go for the jugular in politics, the media calls it inappropriate and despicable. I dare anyone to say publicly that had a Republican president been in the White House when Osama bin Laden was killed, the Republicans would not be using it to bludgeon Democrats upside the head in this election and to tout the Republican so-called superhuman strength on national security. And I dare say that many on the right would not only say it was fair game, they would chide the Democrats for whining about it and would tell them to get over it. fact. Osama bin Laden masterminded the killing of 3,000-plus humans on U.S. soil on September 11, 2001. Fact. President Obama's administration led the campaign to capture and kill Osama bin Laden. Fact. This is a huge accomplishment under the Obama administration. Deal with it. Then again, maybe he would get more credit if he would have flown a 757 onto the Alito deck of a luxury cruise ship with a red, white, and blue banner touting, "I shot the sheriff!" D, Plano, Texas. Hiya, hiya, hiya. Thanks, D. Yeah, have you, I'm sure you've noticed that. All of a sudden, the right-wingers and the Republicans. Oh, how dare President Obama trivialize. I mean, he's using his campaign. Don't Republicans just turn your stomach? Doesn't it make the bile back up in your throat? You know, that little, what Stephanie Miller talks about, a little throw up in the back of your mouth. Huh? Don't they do that? Don't they do it? Yes, they do. You rancid bastards. I swear to God, I can't think of any life form on Earth, and I'm stretching it, calling them a life form, lower than these right-wing scum. I'm serious. I take them way too seriously. But the problem is, yeah, they're like six-year-olds, but they're like six-year-olds with hand grenades and the pins are pulled out. Hi, you want to see my pineapple? Here, catch! We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Sandy. Sandy writes, "Dear Mike, I don't always agree with your tactics on getting progressive or liberal views across, but totally agree with your right to do it however you choose, which is why I'm buying this spot on your program. Truth will always win in the end. Please keep up the good work. I'm a retired utility worker in California and recent small business owner. I grow organic food on less than an acre to sell locally. We need to move away from large mega corporations growing unhealthy and tasteless food to small local farmers growing healthy and delicious food. Support your local small business owner. Thanks, Mike and Kathy." Signed, Sandy. Thank you, Sandy. Yeah, I agree with that. Every Wednesday we go to a little farmer's market, very small, maybe 10 booths in Decatur, Georgia. And every Wednesday afternoon. And they have everything from produce to dairy products to meat. You can order grass-fed animals if you want to. So, yeah, I agree, Sandy. Support your local small business owner, especially if that person is a grower. From Prairie 2. The colonel can sell cheaper if the chickens also pay the bills. One of Mitt Romney's favorite lies these days, Prairie 2 writes, is to label Barack Obama as the enemy of small business. Obama's response is to point to a long list of small business-friendly executive orders. In fact, he's the first president since FDR to show them any real sympathy. But none of the things he's been able to do really makes much of a difference at this point. Traditionally, small business people have always voted Republican since they tended to either believe the nonsense Republicans told them or they foolishly believed that someday they too would be the kind of big business that Republicans actually favor. It's not like they're a big voting bloc anymore. The last 30 years of Republican policies have gotten rid of most of them. Romney likes to point to Staples and Sports Authority as businesses that he started that have created lots of jobs. Both companies were created in the mid-1980s after Reagan decriminalized the practices that had been forbidden since the 1980s antitrust laws were put in place. Neither of these companies, Staples or Sports Authority, created a single net job, but simply overwhelmed and destroyed thousands of small businesses across the country. Actual employment is almost certainly less. Wages definitely are. Right-wingers will blithely tell you that big box stores are good for the masses because they are more efficient. They will say they have economies of scale and can sell goods cheaper, making life better for all Americans. For a long time, many Democrats would tell you the same thing. It seems like simple common sense. They would even cite this as real progress and equate the destroyed small business with the buggy whip maker. You know, if there's no longer any need for buggy whips, goodbye. This is the way a big box store actually works. And by the way, these are exactly the same problems the liberal colonists had with the British East India Company. Call it the big box store of the 1770s. One big savings comes from the control of labor costs. The British East India Company would use slaves. There's one shortcoming to this. Slaves must be fed, clothed, given medical care, housing, and such, because if one dies, you have to buy a new one. And they weren't cheap. The modern big box store doesn't need to concern itself with such things. The employee is paid a third of what it costs to live, and the Medicaid will cover the health care. New slaves, I mean associates, line up at the door to be put in chains, I mean brought onto the team, in more than sufficient numbers to replace those who die from malnutrition and lack of health care. The next big cost saver is to not pay any significant taxes. Playing one local government off against another to get tax breaks, free property and infrastructure improvements, for example. Bribing politicians to get favorable treatment isn't limited to Walmart in Mexico, you know. Offshoring goods works real well to avoid taxes as well. Just create a post office box-sized company in the Cayman Islands to do the importing from China, then resell the product into the U.S. at a huge markup to keep the profits out. China and the U.S. out of China and the U.S. to avoid trillions in taxes. The money can then show up later as foreign investment in the U.S., further benefiting the same transnational corporation. The British East India Company had itself exempted from all taxation in 1770 and got a refund of all the taxes it had ever paid. Oddly enough, this is also the modern Republican tax policy toward massive corporations. Then there is the myth of low prices. The big advantage that the big box store has is that it can come into a town and sell goods cheaper than its competitors, pay for them wholesale. This only lasts until competition is eliminated, of course. But to make sure this always happens, they dictate the wholesale price suppliers sell to small buyers. They do this simply by demanding that they always get the lowest wholesale price as they have, you know, economy of scale. Wholesalers can't actually cut wholesale prices no matter how much you buy, but they can raise the price they charge to the small buyers. Same effect without violating the laws of physics. What did you think? It was a miracle? Consumers think they're getting a bargain because the big box store is cheaper than the little guy who is really subsidizing the low prices of the big box store. He's also paying taxes while the big box store doesn't. This is why the teabaggers go to Staples to buy the materials for their misspelled signs and not to the store owned by their neighbor. Not that they have a choice anymore. The neighbor? He's a door greeter now. Prairie2.com. Yeah. Yeah, I hate the big box stores. And yeah, I go to Target. Is that hypocrisy? Probably. And oh no, I'm a hypocrite. Phone lines are open. 877-996-2556. If you'd like to call in. Greg is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Greg.
How you doing, Mike?
All right. How are you?
I'm excellent. Quick question for you. And first of all, let me preface by saying I agree totally that the Republican or right-wing agenda is inherently evil.
Yes.
However, the question for you is, do you feel that Republicans in general are evil, or Republican politicians who feed, quote-unquote, Republicans this nonsense are the evil culprits, and the people who feed from the they're feeding from the crumbs from the right side of the table as opposed to the left side of the table? Who do you...
That's a hell of a compound sentence you got going there, Greg. I'm not sure exactly where the subject
is. I bought it at Walmart.
Well, here I think their policies. First of all, I don't believe in the idea of good and evil. I just can't. I believe that people do things to exploit other people, to take advantage of other people, to kill other people, to turn other people into slaves, to steal from other people. And that's their nature. And in certain societies, those people are deemed to be worthless and are weeded out, executed, jailed, beheaded, what have you. But having said that, I think Republican or right-wing policies, and the terms are interchangeable, are anti-life. They're anti-truth or anti-justice. They don't have anything to do with the betterment of anybody on earth. They're exploitative. And I think the people who put those policies into play, the right-wing politicians, are just sick. I don't think they're evil. I think they're sick in the head. Now, I reserve the right to call them evil, but I just think they're, like, crazy. They're just crazy. They're out of their goddamn minds. Hope that answered it. Thanks, Greg. Corporations, they stand for piety that doesn't suffer rivals. They're waving flags and guns and quoting from the Bible.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Phones are open. Nobody wants to talk, huh, Kathy? Is it my breath? 877-996-2556. New York Times said today, warrior in chief. Did you see this? The president who won the Nobel Peace Prize less than 9 months after his inauguration has turned out to be one of the most militarily aggressive American leaders in decades. Whoa. Yeah, remember, liberals helped to elect Obama in part because of his opposition to the Iraq War? And most rational liberals don't celebrate the president's many military accomplishments, but they are sizable. He decimated al-Qaeda's leadership. He overthrew the Times puts it this way, he overthrew the Libyan dictator. He ramped up drone attacks in Pakistan. He waged effective covert wars in Yemen and Somalia. He authorized a threefold increase in the number of American troops in Afghanistan. He became the first president to authorize the assassination of a United States citizen, Anwar al-Awlaki, who was born in New Mexico. And, of course, Obama ordered and oversaw the Navy SEAL raid that killed Osama bin Laden. And yet these half-assed Republicans will tell you that he is going around the world apologizing. These sons of bitches are so brain dead. These Republicans, the right-wingers, not only are they brain dead, but they think you are too. You want a warmongering president? You got one! The only thing he hasn't done is officially invade with massive amounts of troops a country that has done nothing. That was Bush and Cheney. Now, as the Times points out, ironically, Obama used his Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech as an occasion to articulate his philosophy of war. And if you remember, and very few of us do, very few of us do, but if you remember, he made it very clear that his opposition to the Iraq War didn't mean that he embraced pacifism. This is what he said, quote, "I face the world as it is and cannot stand idle in the face of threats to the American people. For make no mistake, evil does exist in the world. A nonviolent movement could not have halted Hitler's armies. Negotiations cannot convince al-Qaeda's leaders to lay down their arms. To say that force is sometimes necessary is not a call to cynicism. It is a recognition of history, the imperfections of man, and the limits of reason," end quote. Now, if those on the left were listening, they didn't seem to care. And as the Times points out, the left, which had loudly condemned Bush for waterboarding and due process violations at Guantanamo, was relatively quiet when the Obama administration, acting as judge and executioner, ordered more than 250 drone strikes in Pakistan, during which at least 1,400 lives were lost. No, you don't hear very many liberals talking about that, do you? Why do you suppose that is? Now, ironically or expectedly, Obama's use of force and his record using the military hasn't got any support from the right. And as the Times says, despite countervailing evidence, most conservatives view the president as some kind of peacenik. You know why that is? That's because the bastards are insane. They are truly insane. Where in the hell do Republicans live? Where's the little space inside their minds? It's just full of prayers and evangelical gun toters and saltwater taffy and cockroaches and great big things that go, I mean, where do these people live? There is this continuing dramatic cognitive disconnect between Obama's record and right-wing or public perception of his leadership, despite his willingness to use force. And neither side, according to the Times, regards him as the warrior president that he is. And probably part of the reason is because he doesn't walk around saying things like that dumbass, dry, drunk George Bush who said, "I'm war president. I'm a war president. Yeah, I hit the trifecta. I'm a war president. Here, send these people over there and send them over there. Go kill, 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 kill. Don't come back here with your head blown off. Part of your brain's out. We're not going to pay for you. I'm a war president. I'm a war president. I really am. I'm a war president. Youthful indiscretion. What that means, nobody knows. It must be the savings that were already put up his nose. God, he says he's ready to lead us at much more than 10 cents a dance. But who's really paying it to? While we watch Georgie Brandt, I think 5 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Sandy. Sandy writes, I don't always agree with your tactics on getting progressive or liberal views across, but totally agree with your right to do it however you choose, which is why I'm buying this spot on your program. Truth will always win in the end. Please keep up the good work. I'm a retired utility worker in California, recent small business owner. I grow organic food on less than an acre to sell locally. We need to move away from large mega corporations growing unhealthy and tasteless food to small local farmers growing healthy and delicious food. Support your local small business owner. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Sandy. Thank you, Sandy. I appreciate it very much. Obama as warrior in chief, the Times calls him, New York Times. And the right-wing dolts in this country continue to say he's an appeaser. Or what is this half-assed Romney running around with his ass on fire talking about? Oh, he goes around the world apologizing. Really? How do you apologize with Hellfire missiles? How do you do that, you freak? But you see, what the right-wingers are doing is what they always do. They just lie, just make stuff up. Just make stuff up. Because most people don't check anything. They hear their local right-winger say, Obama apologized to the Saudi king. And they just believe it. George W. Bush defeated Al-Qaeda. And they believe it. John McCain assassinated Osama bin Laden. And they believe it. It doesn't make any difference what kind of garbage is said. They believe it. So, on the one hand, Obama is trapped in his success, quote-quote, his success being in terms of having people killed that were perceived to be people who had ill thoughts about the United States. He's been damn successful, hasn't he? Huh? 1,500 people killed in drone strikes? Wow! Man, that's a lot of blood! And guess how many of those were women and children? Two-thirds? Three-fifths? Four-fifths? Well, you know, collateral damage and stuff like that. What are you going to do? But he sure knows how to deliver jokes at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, doesn't he? And he is going to just kick the ass of these right-wingers up around their shoulders come November 8th. Trust me. Trust me. Mike is driving in California. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you. I hope you can hear me all right.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, I'll try and keep it civil because I know you got to kick me off if I get colorful.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the right wing, they are crazy. And it's not just the Republicans. Also, many Democrats, apparently, because that's why nothing's getting done.
Yeah.
But they're crazy. They are. I mean, right now I'm working. I was calling from Galt. Now I just left through Thornton, and I'm heading up to Elk Grove. And down here in California, in the middle, it's just like Kent. I mean, the people are crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no question. The country has been driven insane very slowly, but very deliberately, very much according to plan. I would say probably more than half, we're probably approaching two-thirds of this country, is sick in the head, unable to think, unable to move, unable to operate in its in our own best interests. It's awful. I don't know how to break out of it. Do you?
Not legally, no. and I don't think it's been slowly coming on. You know, I mean, the first election I really thought about was Carter and Reagan. And I thought, no way could Americans be so stupid as to elect Reagan.
Right.
And they did twice.
Well, that's what I mean. It's been coming on slowly since 1980. That's when we started to go insane.
Then I thought the same thing when Bush was running for president. There's no way people could be that stupid.
Right.
And I was wrong again. But Bush, I think, really did steal the election. But
Yeah, he wasn't elected, but the fact remains it would have been a very close election, and had the counting continued, I think Gore probably would have won by under 200,000 votes. Now, that happened before when Kennedy, the Democrat machine in Illinois, stole the election away from Nixon and gave it to Kennedy. But they did it legally. They stole it legally, if you know what I mean. They didn't rely on the Supreme Court. They just got out there and jimmied the ballots. But what Bush did, Bush would have been defeated by a couple hundred thousand votes, except for the fact that the Supreme Court, right-wing, neo-fascist, appointed him. So there we are.
Yeah, that's where we are. And these people are crazy. And since Obama's been elected, the racism, which either was at the base or what is it, the ignorance and the racism and conservatism all in one hand, right, the same basket or something. They've gone crazy. I mean, they've been saying stuff since the election that would probably get them thrown in jail, right?
Yeah,
just talking
oh, yeah.
like that about the president.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, what Ted Nugent said. Another thing, these guys are crazy, and they're cowards. You know, it's like they're all these chicken hawks, right?
Yeah.
Chicken hawks.
Every one of them.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
And they're cowards. Like what did Nugent do?
Not bathe for weeks
and urinate and defecate in his own pants to get out of going.
That's right, he did.
And Cheney had better things to do.
Right. Well, Cheney had 3 or 4 or 6 or 10 or whatever deferments. And then, of course, he, when all the student deferments ran out, he got married, and 9 months to the day later, his first child was born. And of course, that got him out. Hey, listen, you're starting to fade, Mike. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in, but I'm going to have to move on. Thanks, Mike. Drive safely. Take it easy. Okay. Take it easy. Aaron is in Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on XM. Hello, Aaron.
Well, hello there, Mr. Mike.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Well, that's better than some and worse than others. However, here's what I have to say. I say paying attention to this presidential election between Obama and the Republican primaries is collectively for if you are going to vote for a Republican or for Obama, and if you're paying attention to this race, especially mostly to the exclusion of anything else, you're collectively like Nero fiddling while Rome burns. And it's really making me sick. And I'm not talking about you, because you're one of the few bright lights that talks about real things, you know, way more often than most. But, you know, I think that we are at a critical crisis stage. And for people who make the argument that, for instance, Nader cost Democrats an election, or that any third party candidate would, or primarying Obama would, and blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, if we do an honest assessment of Obama's presidency, and if you're somebody who has criticism for George Bush on all the things he did vis-a-vis torture and civil rights and human rights and war and so on and so forth, I would ask you, where did you get your information? Because if you got any kind of good investigative journalism, any insightful comments from authors, professors, war critics, you know, social critics against Bush, if you go to those same people who you apparently trusted to get your information on the dirt on Bush and listen to what they have had to say about Obama day after day from the beginning, and you don't talk about Obama in the same way as you talk about Bush, you're a fool or a liar or a hypocrite. And that's you know, can be conclusively proven. And for anyone to picking between Obama and Romney or the Democrats and the Republicans in a national election, is you're talking about the Hitler wing versus the Mussolini wing of the fascist party. And you tell me which is which. And which is worse?
Well, I get it, Aaron. I do get it. If you want to use that template, Obama would have to represent the Mussolini faction, And, of course, Romney is too stupid to represent the Hitler faction. Romney is just a clown. He's worse than Bush in terms of being manipulated. Romney, like I've said before, he couldn't find his own ass with both hands if somebody handed him a roadmap. This man is so detached from reality. At least Obama operates in some kind of reality. A weird reality, a reality that says it's okay to ice 1,600 people with drone missiles or with Hellfire missiles fired from drone aircraft. That's a pretty weird reality to live in. There's no question. Aaron, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I hope you call in again. Take care.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and thanks again to Sandy, who sponsored this hour. Sandy's message, I don't always agree with your tactics on getting progressive or liberal views across, but I totally agree with your right to do it however you choose, which is why I'm buying this spot on your program. The truth will always win in the end. Please keep up the good work. I'm a retired utility worker in California and recent small business owner. I grow organic food on less than an acre to sell locally. We need to move away from large mega corporations growing unhealthy and tasteless food to small local farmers growing healthy and delicious food. Support your local small business owner. Thanks, Mike and Candy. Mike and Kathy, signed Sandy. I'll get it right. Thank you, Sandy. I agree with everything you said in here, including the part that, my hysterical tactics at times. Yeah, they are. Very hysterical. Sometimes I wonder how in the hell people listen to this program, but I have good Catholics who listen to this program. Oh, Sanchez is in L.A.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Yeah, I know you have. You've sinned an awful lot there.
I have, as a matter of fact.
All right, 10 Hail Marys, 20 Our Fathers, a couple of acts of contrition, and
how many hours of dragging my back over a sheet of glass?
Well, that too. And then Okay. Go, my son, and sin no more.
Ah, that is so nice.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, I wanted to call in because, I haven't heard too much about tomorrow's big day, which is the May 1st general strike. This is a call to not only the local people, which, by the way, I'm ticked off again because KTLK is running sports. Tonight they're running Long Beach submarine races live from Long Beach Harbor.
Well, but, of course.
Yeah. So on the night that I really want to talk to the L.A. people, they're listening to something.
Okay. That's just.
So anyway, for the rest of.
That's just part of being on KTLK. We knew that when we signed on with KTLK. They are very much into submarine races in Southern California and stuff like that. That's cool.
Well, yeah, they go hand in hand, don't they?
They do indeed.
I know. But anyway, for the rest of the country, tomorrow, May 1st, and a reminder of how that whole story began. I mean, you could tell the story if you want, but I just wanted to tell people to look for any of their Occupy, any city that is across the United States tonight. Go look at Occupy Tulsa, or go look at Occupy San Francisco, or Occupy Oakland, or in my case, Occupy Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And ours, I just wanted to tell you about it, because it's kind of exciting the first time that we're going to do something like this, is we're coming from all four winds in Los Angeles County. We're dividing it up. A west wind will come in from the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to start the march right at Ocean Boulevard and go all the way into downtown, catching people at UCLA and go eastbound. Then there's going to be a southern, we're going north, and I'm part of that group. And I've been working on a few little hip-hop groups I'm going to be putting in as, like, music beds for when the people are speaking behind. But we're starting in the south, the Dominguez Hills, tomorrow, about 10 o'clock in the morning. You can see all that information on their website. I just posted on your Mike Molloy website. But then there's an east wind that begins in two places. Whittier, Occupy Whittier, and the Whittier Peace and Justice Coalition are going to be having some activities in Whittier, and then they move westbound, and then people from Pasadena move now northbound. We're all converging in Los Angeles from 4 to 6. There's going to be music, fiesta kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then a general assembly, a real general assembly will begin approximately at 8 o'clock that evening, and that's how the rest of the evening will go. But in consideration, it's more, again, for the workers. Of course, we're against war, we're for peace, and we're against the banksters, but May 1st is always for the workers, and that's why we're calling for a general strike. It's all over the place. I can tell you, OccupyMay1st.org. Go there, check their site out. At any rate, that's what tomorrow is, what really everybody should be talking about.
Well, you know, it's been very, very low-keyed this year, and by mainstream media, corporate media, and I think because corporate media understands that the Occupy movement has the potential to turn the country on its head, nonviolently, but like clowns turn people on their heads, and by that I mean using the power of irony or the power of humor. The power of righteousness, the power of justice to turn the country on its head. And I think because of that, mainstream media is just kind of, we better leave this one alone. We'll report on it if something happens, but we're not going to talk about it prior to anything happening because we're cowards. You know, that kind of attitude.
Well, there's going to be thousands of people in the streets out here in Los Angeles. I mean, every single union, with the exception, I think, Q, every other letter of the alphabet is included in all the unions
mm-hmm.
that are going to be out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have their own separate little section that where they're going to be having their activities. So you can either wind up at one corner or another, but this is going to be unmistakable. This is something that Mayor Villaraigosa is not going to be able to just dismiss.
Well, do me a favor. We're just about out of time here for this hour, Sanchez. Do me a favor, if you would. 9 o'clock tomorrow evening when we go on the air, 6 o'clock L.A. time. If you can, give me a holler, okay?
I'll do that, sir.
All right, Sanchez, thanks. Be careful.
We'll do that.
All right, sir.
Absolutely.
Take care. All right, stick around. When we come back, E.L. Dr. O. Yeah, the writer, the novelist. No, he's not going to be on the program, but something that he produced over the weekend I'm going to share with you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by John Younger. Thank you, John. His message, Mike, your voice is too powerful. Really? Okay. Mike, your voice is too powerful for us to lose. Under any circumstances, sponsoring 1 hour is the least I can do when you do so much. I love it when you very eloquently kick the crap out of these bat crap crazy continuously devolving Republicans. Thanks, John. I like that. Bat crap crazy continuously devolving Republicans. Isn't that the truth? Man. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Speaking of bat crap, well, I don't know if this guy's a Republican, but I guess you all are familiar, or you were at one point in your life. I know you don't listen to this garbage anymore, but shock jocks, that's how this insane Glenn Beck started out, you know, shock jock. Usually they're on in the morning, and it's designed to appeal to males between the ages of 13 and 19, and it's the worst kind of potty, toilet, locker room, ridiculous, masturbatory, stupid, half-witted, what they consider to be humor. It's usually one guy, and he's got a couple of sidekicks, always a white guy, always ignorant as hell of everything except these little hand jive, ridiculous little comments that these shock jocks make. And as the name indicates, they are there to cause the 14-year-old boys to go, "Oh, did you hear what he said?" And to tell all their friends, so their friends will tune in, and then they have a lot of listeners. Of course, they are all demented teenagers. Not that all teenagers are demented. You know what I'm saying. But that gives numbers to go into the Arbitron book, and then the Arbitron fools advertisers into believing that sane people, adults perhaps, are listening. All that as introduction to this freak in Detroit on Clear Channel. WMMS, used to be a great radio station, 100.7. The Buzzard. I happen to know the artist from years ago, 30 years ago, who came up with the Buzzard logo. Nice guy. But this is back in the day when WMMS was a good, you know, rock station. Now it's a toilet. And there's no further example of how toilet it is than this guy named Dominic Dieter. Is that his name? He told a father that the way to straighten out his lesbian daughter was to have the daughter raped straight. Yeah, how's that? How's that for early morning stuff, huh? Dominic Dieter. Now, when I finish this little story, I'm going to give you a phone number so you can call Clear Channel's Cleveland station, WMMS, and either congratulate the station manager for having such a wonderful example of young American manhood on their morning program, or call and say that you think this piece of human garbage should be taken off the air. It's your call. Or don't do anything, you know, but I'll give you the phone number anyway. According to the incident reports, and this comes via GLAAD, you know who GLAAD is. The anti-gay remark was made by Dominic Dieter, one of the cast members of something called Rover's Morning Glory. I guess that's the name of the show, Rover's Morning Glory. Responding to an email from a father who, God knows why, wrote to this station to say that he'd happened upon his teenage daughter kissing another girl. The punk, Dieter, responded to the father on air by saying, quote, "You should get one of your friends to screw your daughter straight." End quote. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? It's not nice. It's not okay. Not on any level. Not in any context. As the GLAAD website says, we trust that the majority of fair-minded Americans will agree. Make no mistake, if this young woman is in fact gay, or if she's simply not interested in having sex with any of her father's friends, then what this punk Dieter is suggesting is rape. GLAAD is calling for this guy's suspension and for an apology. That's not enough. GLAAD should stop being so weak. This son of a bitch ought to be fired immediately, plain and simple. Just fire his ass. Dieter's statement was not just anti-gay, anti-schmay. It's anti-woman and anti-human. Get rid of this piece of human waste. This is what 14-year-old boy radio is about. And it's a shame, because you wonder where gay bullying comes from. Why do middle school boys start developing this anti-gay bullying, or bullying in general, but especially anti-gay, of kids that they perceive to be gay or are? It doesn't make any difference. Where does it come from? It comes from garbage like Dominic Dieter of WMMS, Clear Channel, 100.7 in Cleveland, Ohio. This is where this stuff comes from. This is where kids wind up hanging themselves or killing themselves, is because of this kind of overt, horrific comments by punk-ass DJs that the 14-year-olds pick up on and go, well, did you hear what Dieter said? Wasn't that funny? Ha, 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 ha. That a screwer straight. Ha, 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 ha. Come on, people. Come on. Have this piece of garbage removed from the airwaves. Come on. You can do it. Here's the phone number. 216-520-2600. And the general manager's name is Gary Mincer, M-I-N-C-E-R, Gary Mincer. The phone number again is 216-520-2600. Again, the phone number is 216-520-2600. And the station general manager is Gary Mincer. Now, I'm not saying that Gary Mincer has any power or authority of the station at all. Clear Channel, Bain Capital, Mitt Romney, they're all tied together. Usually the Clear Channel general managers have zero power. The decisions are made at the corporate level. The general managers are there to turn off the lights at night, make sure the wastebaskets get emptied, and make sure that scum like this Dominic Dieter gets proper ratings. So I don't know how effective it'll be. However, I do know this. Most general managers of radio stations, especially Clear Channel, which is on a phasing out basis with a lot of their employees. I mean, you can see that by reading the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times business section. It's right there. Thousands of people are being let go. So maybe with enough phone calls to this creeps radio station, maybe the punk who said this will be removed. And maybe not. But it's worth a shot. Let me give you the phone number again. 216. That's in Cleveland. 216-520-2600. One more time. 216-520-2600. The general manager's name is Gary Mincer. The punk ass's name is Dominic. Suggesting that a young girl be raped. Wow. Tell you what, morning radio has certainly changed since I used to listen to it. How about you, Truth Seeker? Take a deep breath. Feel like you're choking. Everything is broken. Hey! 21 past the hour. Did you have a chance to read the Sunday Times? The, what's the section? Hold on. It's, you know, they changed their Sunday editorial section. It's now called Sunday Review. A lot of good stuff in Sunday Review by just a wide range of writers. I really enjoy the Sunday Review. One article in here I don't want to get too far into because we've talked about this many times. Homophobic? Maybe you're gay. And it cites some studies now that clearly indicate that hostility toward gay folk can result from the repression of one's own same-sex desire. We talked about that so many times. Of course, the most vehement anti-gay people are that way because society has told us the wrong stuff. The wrong stuff being that there is only one kind of sexuality that is acceptable. Well, you know, unless you're a man watching porn, and then, you know, female-to-female sexuality is wonderful! But if you're not on that particular kick, Americans, well, not just Americans, but most people have been inculcated with the erroneous belief that sex is a certain, has a certain aspect and has to be followed and do otherwise, can get your head lopped off in some societies, can have your clitoris burned off in others, can have your penis removed in others, you can be hanged in others. I mean, you know, really, huh? How about that? All about sex? Woohoo! But if we had a rational approach to sex, that sex is, and stop right there. I mean, what are you going to add to that? Sex is. That's it. But we don't do that. You know, we take all this religious garbage and pollute sex. And it is all religion. All of it comes from religion, from twisted, perverted religion. And, of course, fear of women, but that's also where religion comes from. I'm way digressing here. But the article made it clear that from these empirical studies now that the most vehement, vocal, anti-homosexual voices in America are coming from the larynxes and the throats and the chests and the breathing systems of people who repress their own inclination to same-sex sex. And the reason they repress it is because to do otherwise would be to label them as queer. And you know what happens then. Right? So anyway, that was one of the articles in the Sunday Review section. If you you can access it online, I guess, if you're a subscriber. No, I guess you get some free ones if you're not a subscriber to the print copy. I realize that there are certain aspects of the New York Times that are very pro-corporate, very pro-war, very pro-this, pro-that. I understand that. But I also understand that the Times is kind of a repository for some very, very good opinion writing. One example, E.L. Doctorow, the author, writer, he participated in, let's see, who else was involved? It was he and Margaret Atwood, and who was the third one? It's a little section called Looking at America from Outside and Within. And also Martin Amis. But E.L. Doctorow, Margaret Atwood, and Martin Amis were asked to write something about American exceptionalism or unexceptionalism. And just one of these I want to share with you, the one by E.L. Doctorow, Unexceptionalism, a Primer, is how it is headlined. Or Primer, Primer or Primer? Either one. But the attempt by the people who put this section together, the attempt was to to commemorate the fact that from April 30th to May 6th, writers from 25 countries will be in New York for the festival sponsored by the Penn American Center. The Writers Union, more or less. Writers Human Rights Organization. As part of the festival, A.O. Scott, a critic for the New York Times, will talk with the writers Martin Amis, Margaret Atwood, and E.L. Doctorow at a Times Talk event on May 2nd, co-sponsored by the Consulate General of Canada in New York. So the Times asked these three writers. Atwood is from Canada, Amis is from Britain, and Doctorow is from the United States. They asked the three writers to consider the question of America and its role in global political culture. And the three authors, the three writers, responded. And the one I want to share with you is the one by E.L. Doctorow, and I'll do that when we come back. Stay with us.
Far gone to recover. Can I return if I try? Should I trade my soul for
Redefining Anger Management, back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by John Younger. His message, Mike, your voice is too powerful for us to lose under any circumstances. Sponsoring 1 hour is the least I can do when you do so much. I love it when you, very eloquently, kick the crap out of these bat-crap-crazy, continuously devolving Republicans. Amen, amen. Thanks, John. Appreciate the sponsorship and the message. E.L. Doctorow, the Pulitzer Prize winning writer. And it was in the section of the Sunday Times, Sunday Review, that is one of the most readable sections of just about any newspaper put out. It really is, really is. Unexceptionalism, a primer. He writes, to achieve unexceptionalism, the political ideal that would render the United States indistinguishable from the impoverished, traditionally undemocratic, brutal, or catatonic countries of the world, do the following. This is how we align ourselves with the countries he just described. Phase one. If you're a justice of the Supreme Court, ignore the first sacrament of a democracy and suspend the counting of ballots in a presidential election. Appoint the candidate of your choice as president. If you're the newly appointed president, react to a terrorist attack by invading a non-terrorist country. Despite the loss or disablement of untold numbers of lives, manage your war so that its results will be indeterminate. Using the state of war as justification, order secret surveillance of American citizens, data mine their phone calls and email, make business, medical, and public library records available to government agencies, perform illegal warrantless searches of homes and offices. Take to torturing terrorism suspects here or abroad in violation of the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, which prohibits the infliction of cruel and unusual punishment. Unilaterally abrogate the Convention Against Torture as well as the Geneva Conventions regarding the treatment of prisoners of war. Commit to indeterminate detention without trial those you decide are enemies. And for good measure, trust that legislative supporters will eventually apply this policy as well to American citizens. Suspend progressive taxation so that the wealthiest pay less proportionately than the middle class. See to it that the wealth of the country accumulates to a small fraction of the population so that the gap between rich and poor widens exponentially. By cutting taxes and raising wartime expenditures, deplete the national treasury so that Congress and state and municipal legislatures cut back on domestic services, ensuring that there will be less money for the education of the young, for government health programs, for the care of veterans, for the maintenance of roads and bridges, for free public libraries, and so forth. Deregulate the banking industry so as to create a severe recession in which enormous numbers of people lose their homes and jobs. Before you leave office, add to the Supreme Court justices like the ones who awarded you the presidency. End of phase one. Phase two. If you're one of the conservative majority of a refurbished Supreme Court, rule that corporations, no less than human beings, have the right under the First Amendment to express their political point of view. To come to this judgment, do not acknowledge that corporations lack the range of feelings or values that define what it is to be human. That humans can act against their own interests, whereas corporations cannot act otherwise than in their own interests. That the corporation's only purpose is to produce wealth, regardless of social consequences. This decision of the court will ensure tremendous infusions of corporate money into the political process and lead to the election in national and state legislatures of majorities of de facto corporate lobbyists. End of phase two. Phase three. Given corporate control of legislative bodies, enact laws to the benefit of corporate interests. For example, those laws sponsored by weapons manufacturers, wherein people may carry concealed weapons and shoot and kill anyone by whom they feel threatened. Give the running of state prisons over to private corporations whose profits increase with the increase in inmate populations. See to it that a majority of prisoners are African American. When possible, treat immigrants as criminals. Deplete and underfinance a viable system of free public schools and give the education of children over to private for-profit corporations. Make college education nearly unaffordable. Inject religious precepts into public policy so as to control women's bodies. Enact laws prohibiting collective bargaining. Portray trade unions as un-American. Enact laws restricting the voting rights of possibly unruly constituencies. Propagandize against scientific facts that would affect corporate profits. Portray global warming as a conspiracy of scientists. Having subverted the Constitution and enervated the nation with these measures, portray the federal government as unwieldy, bumbling, and shot through with elitist liberals. Create mental states of maladaptive populism among the citizenry to support this view. End of phase three. Phase four. If you're a justice of the Supreme Court, decide that the police of any and all cities and towns and villages have the absolute authority to strip search any person whom they, for whatever reason, put under arrest. And with this ruling, the reduction of America to unexceptionalism is complete. E.L. Doctorow's Unexceptionalism, a Primer, or a Primer. Oh! Now, when I read that on Sunday, I'm sitting there reading it, and I'm thinking, how many of these instances have already become accomplishments. Fait accompli. How many? Just about everything he listed. So the road to unexceptionalism, the path that puts us at the same level, as Dr. O puts it, indistinguishable from the impoverished, traditionally undemocratic, brutal, or catatonic countries of the world. And when he added the word catatonic, all I could think of was North Korea. Talk about catatonic. So there you have it. If you have a chance, I would strongly recommend that you get that piece. And the one that Margaret Atwood wrote also. She wrote it as from a standpoint of Martians coming here and what they observed. You know what I wonder sometimes? I wonder how many warnings are, how many warnings are we supposed to get before the warnings become meaningless about the dissolution of the primary idea when this country was put together, that is representative government. I know. At the very beginning, it was not representative at all. But slowly but surely, it took a couple hundred years, but it finally got to the point where representative government appeared to be the newborn baby in the crib. And it didn't take the religious right and the political right very much effort or time to immediately put a blanket over that baby's head and suffocate it, smother it, kill it. And that's awfully disconcerting to me. Is it to you, Truth Seeker? It took such a long time to get to the point where we all had an equal shot at being represented in government. And just about the time that that was accomplished, capitalism took a look and said, Oh, hell no. It was fine to aspire to such fantasies. But once the fantasies looked as though they were going to solidify and become realities, Oh, no. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by John Younger. Thank you, John. His message, Mike, your voice is too powerful for us to lose under any circumstances. Sponsoring 1 hour is the least I can do when you do so much. I love it when you very eloquently kick the crap out of these bat crap crazy, continuously devolving Republicans. That's a great message. Thanks, John. Thanks for the sponsorship. I appreciate it very, very much. American exceptionalism. Yeah, when I was a kid, growing up in the in the 50s, back in that golden era, when everything was just wonderful, unless you were African American or female or gay or an immigrant, you know, but it was wonderful. Oh, such a golden-tinged, golden-hued era back in the day. We were taught American exceptionalism. Yeah, we were. We were. And I don't know, it was so odd. What were we watching the other night, Kathy? What was the late show? And I kept saying, look, not a single black person. Peyton Place. Peyton Place, that's right. Peyton Place came out when I was in high school. I think it was high school. And the book, Grace Metalius's book. Oh, it was just so shocking. Oh, my God, there were parts in that book that were underlined, and the pages were dog-eared and handed around from, you know, kid to kid in our school. Was it high school? Maybe it was. Anyway, when the movie came out, of course, everybody couldn't wait to go see the movie. All the good parts were excised, of course. But we were watching this movie the other night. I think Sunday night. Yeah, Sunday night. Last night. And the movie was made in, what, 58, 62? I don't know. But not a single black person in the entire movie. But I digress. Anyway, we were taught about American exceptionalism. We had defeated the forces of fascism in World War II. The country was this huge churning industrial engine because there was no place else on earth that had the capacity for industrial churning as we did. Not even the countries that weren't touched. Canada, Mexico, South America. That, you know, it was us. It was our from the mid-20th century on. Whew! American exceptionalism. And I don't remember being the least bit surprised at all. It just wasn't in my, you know, it didn't come into focus for me. But I remember when I was in elementary school and we came back from summer vacation and they had added Under God to the Pledge of Allegiance. I never could figure out later why they did that, as though we didn't already know that. I mean, come on, everybody knew that. This was God's country. Everybody knew. So why'd they have to put it there? And who is Joe McCarthy, and what was this all about communists? And Eisenhower's a communist, really? But still, American exceptionalism. Now, why we were taught that, I guess every country does it, right? But not to the degree, I don't think, I don't know. I wasn't raised in France or Canada or Vietnam. So I don't know to what degree those countries pump into the heads of their youth the idea of exceptionalism. Now or 60 years ago, I have no idea. But man, I can remember thinking, wow, I'm an American and I'm also white. And I'm a boy. Talk about a triple play. Woohoo! Of course, that started to shatter fairly quickly. The butchery of Emmett Till, I think, was one of the things that pulled me up short. But there were other things that came, you know. And then finally, it pretty much culminated with the gunning down of John Kennedy. American exceptionalism. What a terrible, sad myth. Terrible in the literal sense of the word. Sad because it was just simply not true. Terrible, terrifying myth, because it gave a couple of generations there license to go stomp on other people around the earth, murdering, killing, bombing, looting, especially the looting part. So when I see someone as erudite and such a good writer as E.L. Doctorow talking about how to establish unexceptionalism, you know, I think, well, that was a pretty powerful piece. But of course, Dr. O started with the December 12th, 2000, that we've talked about on this program. Bob Alexander has talked about it frequently. I've talked about it. You've talked about it. And I wanted to say, when I read the piece to E.L. Doctorow, whose work I really, really, really enjoy reading, I wanted to say, sir, excuse me, but, you know, it started before that, the unexceptionalism move. It really did start in the 50s. Sorta. Of course, then the thought occurred to me, well, it never was exceptional. It presented itself, the United States did, as exceptional. But it was just another myth. Oh, and then I got all depressed and turned off the TV and said, to hell with it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.